Mark Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
Just gone 8:34 Central African time, at that time of the morning, where we join a world-renowned political analyst. He's from the Northwest University's, our very own Professor Andre Duvenaga. Good morning, and tell me how you're doing this beautiful Sunday morning, Prof.
Good morning, Shafat. Indeed, a beautiful Sunday morning, also here in Potchefstroom, but it's a day where dark clouds are forming in our politics, and indeed, a dangerous situation, probably the biggest crisis in the history, the recent history of the ANC as an organization.
Prof, you couldn't have said it better. And then it's Charles Powell, was it? The book is it's a mafia state and it's run by a mafia. But it seems as if there's a bigger mafia in power, because he says, I won't resign just yet. And it seems as if the Stellenbosch mafia are telling him what to do. What's your thoughts there, Prof?
Well, Shafat, there's a number of angles we can take on the situation. And you can analyze it from different perspectives. You can take the Stellenbosch mafia or economic and financial interest as your point of departure. You can also take the decay of the structures of the ANC as another point of departure, or the endemic corruption within the organization, the upcoming national conference and the pressure it put on existing structures to function well. Everything you can take. But the interesting thing, or my central point of departure, is that we are working with an organization that is falling apart. That is not a recent thing. This is happening over years, decades. You can trace it back, I think, to the times of Thabo Mbeki and Jacob Zuma, the crisis there. And since then, it developed in a direction, to the extent that the ANC as an organization cannot take binding decisions. And then we had the dynamic of 2017, putting Ramaphosa in charge. And yes, there you can argue, and it is speculated without any formal evidence, that, and I won't call it the Stellenbosch Mafia, I will rather go bigger and say economic and financial interests nationally and internationally. So in Ramaphosa, the guy to clean up this process, to bring us back the new dawn idea. And from there on, we had the Zondo Commission. And the Zondo Commission was opening up a can of worms to the extent that it became unmanageable. It implicated not only the political elite, but it implicated the hardcore securocrats, the Arthur Frasers, running with private houses. And I remember that very well. I was deeply informed about that. Private armies doing criminal-related activities in some ways, according to at least media sources. And the end result was a Ramaphosa that was becoming more and more absent, couldn't manage the situation. And you remember, Shafat, and I remember you in person supported me at that point in time. 2 years back, I told people there were forces trying to take him out. Mm. And then we had the COVID thing, and the COVID thing played itself out in Ramaphosa on a tactical level, survive and survive and survive. And now he is in a relative favorite position to win the election. And that is what, and I've just listened to a senior ANC veteran, and I cannot agree more with him. This is currently with a current Ramaphosa dynamic, and that is what we think he is in process of resigning. I honestly think he already resigned and he was stopped. That was 2-3 days ago. But the veteran's analysis is, the ANC is in its deepest crisis since he became part of the organization. That was 76. And the organization cannot do without the Ramaphosa. If they enter the 2024 election without Ramaphosa, then the whole organization is going to fall apart. And the moment the organization is falling apart, it's going to create instability throughout the country. Then these mafias and these networks of mafias with their anchors within the ANC and bigger state will become active. And then we will enter a deeper phase of what we call the failed state. So at the moment, the process is to see if they can keep Ramaphosa on board, try to persuade him. But what is clear is that the NEC is so deeply divided, the meeting collapsed on Saturday. And I understand the meeting's schedule for later on is also postponed now, the NWC meeting and the other NEC meeting. So anything is possible at this time. And now we must think, Shafat, we are 2 weeks ago, maximum less than 2 weeks ago, away from the national conference of the ANC. At this point in time, Free State and Western Cape haven't even had their provincial elections. It seems to me as if the most likely scenario is an ANC falling apart. And that is not in the interest of the country. I'm not an ANC supporter, but that is not in the interest of the country. What is in the interest of the country is stability, at least some form of leadership. Although I criticize Ramaphosa in many ways, I believe that he is a better option than the likes of people like Zweli Mkhize's, the Ace Magashule's, the Suprema Mopelus, the Tony Yengenis, his Kosazana Dlamini Zumas, and maybe even the Ndiwe Sisulus. So in that sense, the ANC is faced with a catch-22, and I don't know if they can manage it.
You know, Prof, we know recently that the ANC couldn't pay its staff members in Luthuli House. They were short of cash and so forth. And we know that Cyril Ramaphosa, it's a fact that he bought his way through the previous election and put himself in power. And he has all that money under the mattress, all those millions of dollars. And it is believed, it is alleged that that money was kept aside for the elections. It was kept aside on buying certain individuals and so forth and so forth. There is no documentation where that money came from, how it got there, how it stays in the farm gate and mattress gate and all this gate. What are your thoughts, Prof?
Well, Shafat, these are all rumors. We don't have. The interesting fact is Ramaphosa didn't react once against Palapala. We have seen reports. We have seen the comments coming from the Commission of Inquiry, the Prima Facie case and all the grounds for the Prima Facie case. And there's the interesting contrasting argument coming from O'Sullivan and these people saying that there's no grounds for a case against Ramaphosa. So this is a conflicting matter. My take on it is probably true that he kept the money on the outside, telling us there's only one way you can get elected in the ANC, and that is not only Ramaphosa's way. That is also with regard to other candidates. And we must take into consideration that State Security Agency organized all the previous elections and funded them in terms of Jacob Zuma, the one in Bloemfontein, for example. So there's money running around. Politics has become a money game. Like a body is functioning with blood, this system is functioning on corruption money. So I can believe that that may be the case, that may be the strategy. And Arthur Fraser picked it up, he's at high risk, and he used it. And I think that Ramaphosa asked himself the question. And sometimes in your life, you came to a point where you ask yourself the question. In Afrikaans, we have the saying, is die koel die sous daar? Is this what I really want to bring on myself? Or is it just not what I would like to do? My understanding is that Cyril is clean, relatively clean, when it comes to South African internal politics. but they may have been involved in international deals, and there I read the Patrice Motsepe lines and so on and so on. But there is money involved. There is probably a prima facie case against him. But I think he has lost confidence in the process. And in terms of my own analysis of South African politics, and now I'm only reading the ANC as one of many variables, we are in a crisis a lot bigger than the 80s, early 90s. But what is more concerning is, and many people criticize F.W. de Klerk, and some even within the ANC, even coming from Winnie Madikizela Mandela, criticizing Nelson Mandela, but at least they were leadership. There was that ability to step up to the next level to say, okay, let's do it for the country. Let's do it for the people. Put self-interest aside. That was the compromise, in a way, between the old National Party and the ANC of that time. At the moment, the sole group is the ANC, and I cannot see them compromising from within. And that is the trouble we are in. And it is clear to me, Shafat, this ANC is not going to win the 2024 elections. There are too many surveys indicating as to us, and if we look at the dynamics of the last week, and I can assure you, in future, we are going to read books about what happened over the last 96 hours in South Africa. Because it is absolute critical developments, changing the path, changing the direction of South African politics. And what may come from this dynamic, I believe, if not managed very carefully, may be a very negative scenario.
Yeah, Prof, I'm looking at a message from Kasim on the screen. He says, good morning, Professor Andre Duvenaga. You are simply one of the best. But unfortunately, Prof, I'd like to disagree with you in saying that the ANC will still garner enough support from the black votes to stay in power. Our people here don't think. They are just carried away with the ANC, and as long as they can sing some songs and have a bottle of wine or be drunk, they will be happy with the ANC and with the pittance that they give them as social grants and so forth. And also, Prof, my second point is, why hasn't Cyril Ramaphosa protected the minorities when it was a July unrest? Thank you very much. I look forward to your comments. Prof, how do you respond to Kassim?
In a way, he's absolutely right. The levels of political literacy in the country is so low. And I talk to many black people. They are buying these people over shortly before elections with bread and a piece of meat and, as he said, a bottle of wine, whatever. That is absolutely the case. It is possible. But there's one important requirement for this. You need to have an elite that is working together. There need to be a minimum consensus. That minimum consensus was there under the Zuma period, although not desirable, but it was there. At least the organization could take decisions. At least they could fire Nene with huge implications. And the van dropped like it dropped a few days ago, but they took decisions. At the moment, it seems as if this organization is so divided, it cannot even take a decision. That's the one point. The second point is that I've read three or four surveys, Ipsos, Marginal, Bankhurst, and there were others, indicating that the ANC support, that is the United States, has dropped. Some they indicated just below 50, others took it as low as 37%. And so it is clear to me, if we look at the current divisions within the ANC, and if we look at taking Ramaphosa out, the chances of getting even that lower percentage may become lower. But now, the interesting thing is already happening here in Gauteng with Panyasa Lesufi. And I have heard the utterances of Paul Masekile and a few others. It is absolutely clear that they will align with the EFF and ensure a majority. That is what the resignation of Ramaphosa means, a more radical, more progressive, more destructive ANC aligned with the EFF and maybe other black consciousness groups achieving a majority, and that's a worst-case scenario. So it's a very, and there I'm in agreement with the perspective, but I still believe the ANC is going to get below 50, but they can govern in alliance with some of these radical groups. The second point about the minorities, absolutely right. We are not safeguarding the minorities. In fact, there's legislation on a racial basis in the country, like the old apartheid dispensation, using race as criterion to exclude merit and by implication also people from the minority groups. And when I talk minority, I'm talking about the so-called coloreds, the Indian people, the white people, and maybe even some of the black groupings as well. So Shafat, in that sense, correct.
Prof, you know, we know that Cyril Ramaphosa is consolidating his opposition. The ANC is fighting for his life. But let's be realistic. This country has no security for its citizens. There is mayhem. We have perhaps a worse record, maybe the murder capital of the world, or, you know, many other things, the kidnapping capital of the world, and drugs and all the conduits are in this country. But no one is discussing security for the citizens of this country. It's mayhem, Prof. It doesn't matter what the ANC wants. It matters what the people need, but they don't have a profit. Your thoughts?
Yes. That's what you are describing there is in a way what we call the so-called poster. And the statistics on this is absolutely devastating. The statistics are telling us that there are something around 10,000 private security institutions looking after the interest of individuals, communities, and groups. And we had a lot of conversations about that. Employing about 500,000 people. But this is not only happening on the level of security. While driving from Secunda to Potchefstroom, I was with my parents over the weekend, and looking at all the Kuru schools, I have seen how far we are busy privatizing schools. And I ask a person about the price. It's costing a huge lot. I think something like 5,000 rand a month taking one of these your children to these schools. So schools are privatizing. Even the academia are in a phase of privatization, doing their own thing. My take on it is it has reached the point where we have what we call a hybrid or a parallel state. You have the formal state, and then you create your own state to serve the needs and what the people want to do at the grassroots level. And that is not only with regard to the white people, that is with regard to all people, and implicate the provision of water, the provision of electricity, fixing potholes and other infrastructure. In a way, we are creating our own destination because this state that would like to do everything is a failing state into the extreme.
Yeah, absolutely, Prof. And we talk about extremes and we look at the opposition parties, you know, all in their own world, or, you know, sometimes they're fighting each other. How does this infighting between opposition groups, does it benefit the ANC in any way?
Yes, it does benefit the ANC because there's no consensus among opposition groups. We have seen what is going on between Action South Africa and the Democratic Alliance and the Freedom Front Plus and so on. But Shafat, there are positive signals. There are people accepting the reality that we cannot continue with the ANC. The ANC, in my view, is an outdated organization that cannot work for the benefit of this country anymore. And we need an alternative. And as Samuel Huntington, the well-known academic, said, the coming together must be institutionalized. And I believe that the rain is preparing itself for people coming closer to each other. Communities of different origin, different identity, different class, different status. And I have seen these small codesas taking place in areas. I'm listening to people talking about these things, sometimes within the context of coalition politics. A few examples, the DA and the IFP has a closer cooperation in KZN trying to oust the ANC in KZN. We have seen cooperation between the Freedom Front Plus and the Democratic Alliance. I know that in person I've seen that. That Corneille Mulder and Helen Zille is working closer together. We have unfortunately also seen the EFF and the ANC working together as a result of certain grouping, certain realities. Well, the EFF wanting Ekurhuleni and control of Ekurhuleni as one of the basic conditions for cooperation with the ANC. But I think there are room. What is lacking at the moment is leadership to take this process forward. And hopefully we can identify that leaders to work towards the common good, to bring all South Africans in play. And again, I'm the best reference I have is what I have seen in Canada. They have their own identities as British Canadians, as French Canadians, as Italians, as Germans, etc., etc. But when it comes to Canada, there's a nationality and a national identity. So we need to work with diversity, but relay diversity into a form of unity.
Prof, looking at this question, and it's from Tawfiq. He says, dear Prof, you talk about the majority of the blacks not having that level of education of being refined. But I would like to tell you that are there any top black intellectuals that can make a difference into their lives? And if there are, these are other people or the other majority will not understand their level of thinking. Please, Prof, I'd like your comments. How do you respond to Tawfiq, Prof?
Yes, I'm in a way in agreement. I think the real black intellectuals are thin, but they are coming through the system. I have interaction with a lot of them throughout this year, and there is, without any doubt, progress in some lines. And some of them are my individual students, and I have seen them grow over time. So there's at least some progress, but it is, like the saying is, going one soul at a time, and it's very thin at the moment. That is not only applicable to the political context, that is also applicable to other aspects. That's one of the reasons for Eskom's crisis and so on. But the bigger problem, Shafat, is the majority, the masses. The gap between the elites and the masses are huge. It's interesting, I have seen or heard a comment about language in KZN, where people are telling me that English is losing ground and that Zulu is coming through. Now, in my ears, that is in a way positive, but that is also an indication of Africanization, tribalization, working away from a higher level of technology, of innovation, of creativity. The challenge is to bring in this majority of people. And what is interesting, you will find that the biggest reaction against the ANC is coming from the urban areas. That's why we have the dynamic in the urban area. But when it comes to the rural areas, these people are still ANC orientated. And that's primarily one of the reasons why Robert Mugabe survived so long. The resistance from the MDC and other opposition groups came from the urban areas and not from the rural areas. So I think our problem is with the rural context and to a lesser extent with the urban context. But the leadership thin, the developments, the academic developments and related value systems slow, some elites coming through, but not enough to change the process in a fundamental way.
I'm looking at a message from Abdullah. It says, Shafaz Ahmed Khan and Professor Andre Duvanaga, brilliant show indeed. I got my whole family members are listening to y'all. Prof, I want to know, ANC first was a liberation movement. It was selfless, and suddenly it came into power. It became a capitalistic movement, and it became selfish. It's all about the money, Prof, now. I'm worried about the young black intellects that will get in there. They won't get there. They won't get there to please the people. They'll come in for selfish reasons. They will not be selfless. The selfless man is gone. Money has captured everyone. Prof, how do you respond to Abdullah?
Well, I think in a way I have answered Abdullah earlier by saying that this body is functioning with blood. That is the corruption of the system,
sure.
And it cannot function without corrupt blood, otherwise this system will fall apart. But I am in agreement, and I will answer it in a way by saying, how do you change a communist towards a capitalist? You are just giving them money, and they will change their orientation immediately. And there are ways of giving people money. The state can, in a corrupt way, give people money, and they are becoming part of a market-orientated, corrupt system. Now, what we have seen in South Africa is corruption in the extreme, institutionalized in a way we called it state capture. And basically, a lot of people in South Africa cannot make a living, cannot function outside the framework of corruption. That is why I said from the beginning, this job is going to be too big for Ramaphosa to change around. And there are too much vested interests. In a way, people are becoming dependent on the state, not only in terms of social grants and positions in terms of deployment strategies, but also in terms of corruption. Therefore, corruption is a system. And I am afraid at this moment, I don't think you can play the political game outside of the framework of corruption. And that is by no means trying to support that or legitimize this or justify corruption. I'm not doing that by no means whatsoever. But that is the reality. And it seems that our moral compass is gone. We don't have any direction. And that is where ethical leaders are coming into play. And in a way, I am feeling extremely sorry for Mr. Cyril Ramaphosa. I honestly think he tried his best under circumstances. I'm not saying that his hands was clean, but you need to play a game. As the saying goes, all is fair in love and war, that type of thing. I think he was in that love and war situations. And as you know, and I mentioned it earlier, I'm not one of his biggest supporters, but I definitely think his corruption was not on the level I have seen with Jacob Zuma and that gangs that was primarily the Guptas and so on responsible for state capture. But the big question now, how are we going to turn this around? We need to rebuild a complete state. This is not only a leadership problem. This is not only a government problem, not only an ANC problem or a regime problem. This is a problem of the state as state. In a way, we need to redefine and redevelop the state. That is the challenge. And it seems to be a challenge too big for for Cyril Ramaphosa and the ANC has nothing better to offer at this point, Dieter.
Yeah, Prof, also, you know, when you look at our neighbors, how do we as South Africa, how do we fare? I mean, it seems like Zimbabwe is looking safer bed than South Africa. What's your thoughts?
Well, I think people are looking in a very, very negative way towards South Africa. I don't think we are the big brother they are looking up to. In fact, I am getting the perspective from some African states and African leaders, and I've heard them over the radio, that they are looking at huge, with huge disrespect towards South Africans, and specifically to the government of South Africa and their supporters. In a way, if you look what is going on in places like Angola, I think at the moment, Angola has the biggest army in Southern Africa. Shafat, that's a huge shift from the period before 1994, when South Africa had one of the most sophisticated armies in the world. In some categories of infantry, they rated us as one of the best in the world, if not the best. We look at ESCOM, where ESCOM, among 60 countries identified for the study, produced electricity at the lowest cost. We had some of the best infrastructure. At the moment, we can show literally nothing. And that is why we have a parallel state creating an alternative away from the state, because it is not working. It is becoming completely dysfunctional.
I tell you, Prof, you were absolutely brilliant as usual this morning. Your parting words?
Shafat, we are into a difficult time, and we need to watch the space, see if the ANC can take this process forward. I honestly hope that they can at least reconcile to the extent that we will have leadership to take us forward. They are mandated to take us until 2024. I don't think they will go for an early election at this point, because they are too much at risk. But as I always say, it's a new time, it's a time for new thinking, it's a time for building bridges, it's a time to ask the right questions and give the best answers. Thank you very much.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.